Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm J.J. Cooper alongside Connor Glassie as we come to you from a rather chilly, and it's been chilly for a little while, Durham, North Carolina. Definitely not baseball weather right now here.
No, I think Jim Callis brought some of the Chicago weather down here while he's editing the Prospect Handbook.
Yeah, Jim's here. Jim makes a couple of trips during Prospect Handbook season as we're putting the finishing touches on that. We'll actually have that book sent to the printer we're recording this on a Wednesday. By next Wednesday, this book will be on the way to the printer, and so if you're waiting for your fix of the top 30 of your team or just the top 900, you know, the 900 prospects overall, well, it's not that far away now. We'll be sending that to you, you know, if you order it relatively quickly now. It's not Christmas time for that, but Christmas in January as far as the prospect handbook. But wanted to remind you before we get really kind of rolling into this that the Baseball America podcast is brought to you by MLB Network, and we're really proud to be sponsored by MLB Network. And a reminder that we have a special offer on the site. If you go to baseballamerica.com/MLB Network, there's the 4 for 4 opportunity where you can buy 4 issues for $4 to kind of check us out and get an idea. If you've listened to the podcast but don't buy the magazine, get an idea of what the magazine's like. And we think, you know, we really feel like that you'll enjoy what you see. Right now we're in prospect season, so if you order that now, you'll get some top tens, which is one of our kind of pride and joys and one of our cornerstones of the year for the magazine. And what we're going to talk about today is we want to wrap up the AL West, which we just finished putting up on the site. The AL West top tens, Mike Trout's on the cover. I think it's safe to say the number one prospect from these AL West teams, but when it comes to the teams as a whole, these top tens, we look at these top tens, which top ten stands out to you the most, Connor?
Well, you know, I think it's still probably the Rangers. You know, they were our number two organization last year, is
that
right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was them two.
The Braves?
Rays won.
The Rays?
Yeah, I think Rays won them two, but I just off the top of my head, and I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I think it's still them. I mean, Martin Perez, you know, had a little bit of a difficult year this year, but I think he's still, you know, a quality prospect. He's their number one guy, and right behind him, you know, I really like Jerickson Profar as a shortstop, and then Tanner Shepherd's at three. That's a really solid top three. But I you know, as far as top threes go, I think the Mariners is pretty close to that.
I was gonna say I was very surprised. Like when I looked at it, just talking top tens here. You know, we'll have top 30s in the prospect handbook. But as far as top tens, not as much of a difference as I thought there would be between the Rangers and Mariners.
Yeah, and especially when you break down those top three guys. I think the Mariners' top three really stacks up with almost anybody in baseball. It thins out after that for sure, but those top three, you know,
Dustin Ackley, Michael Pineda, and Nick Franklin.
That's a really solid top three. You know, I've just kind of started taking a preliminary look at doing an overall top 100, just kind of, you know, sorting guys out.
I'm starting to try to do that myself.
Excel spreadsheet there and putting guys where I think they belong. You know, I think the Mariners top three, I think they've got three in the top 30, 35 range, which is really solid.
Right. And now, if you had a knock on the Mariners, it's like, okay, when you go from Nick Franklin at three to Taiwan Walker at four, that's a, you know, you should have three in the top 35 or so. Number four is
for the top 100.
Number four is probably going to be somewhere around 140, 150, just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Is that now, I think that when you get, you know, 4 to 10 on that list isn't a brutal list by any stretch. I mean, because I think, like, you know, Mauricio Robles at six, guys like that are solid prospects. But, yeah, I think the Rangers is still number one because they do have more depth than that. Like Robbie Erlen, the number four in the Rangers system, yeah, he could be a top 100. You know, probably more back end, but he could be a top 100 guy.
I think so, too.
Engel Beltre, their number five, probably not for me, but I could see guys voting for him top 100.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we both agree, those two organizations, as far as top 10s, now, the Angels have a number one prospect who's better than any of these guys we're talking about.
Yeah.
I think we'd both agree. Mike Trout.
Mike Trout's the best prospect of this bunch. I will say Dustin Ackley, I think, is pretty close. But Trout is, I would take Trout.
Yeah, I would say, Ackley. I mean, to me, Trout is a good couple of notches ahead of Ackley. Nothing against Ackley, but much less concerned about the position, you know, with Trout. and just considering how young he is, I mean, he's really – you're talking about a guy who's probably going to play all this year in Double A, and he's going to do it for most of the year as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I could see him maybe playing the back of the season in Double A, but
yeah, I mean,
he didn't tear up.
But I would, I should put it more like I would expect. But if he had a good spring, I wouldn't be shocked to see him. You know, in, I mean,
he did play with that Team USA team
right
after the season, and you know, all those guys were older than he
right
was,
I mean,
for the most part.
Our projection that Matt Eddy did in his top 10 said, you know, by the latest, he should be in Double A by July.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it could be earlier than that. It could be July as a 19-year-old in you know, and then turning 20 just as the season ends. But if things break for him, I mean, you know, the sky's just the limit for him, just from the standpoint of you're talking about an exceptional athlete who
mm-hmm
has baseball aptitude too. Now,
yep,
the thing with the Angels system is that the gulf between number one and number two is, it's the Grand Canyon, I think it's fair to say.
Well,
Tyler Chatwood's a, you know, nothing against Tyler Chatwood, but that's a big drop from Mike Trout.
Yeah, anything probably would be.
Yeah,
you know, but and I like Chatwood. I think he's I think he'd probably be a top 100 guy for me as well, but lower down, you know, probably 50
yeah
to 100, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that, it is true. Like that, you know, Mike Trout's just, I mean, if he's not the number one prospect in baseball, and I think we'll have some very
interesting
debate.
There's going to be some debate about that. There's going to be some debate because there's,
but he's going to be
split camp around here, it seems.
I feel very comfortable that he will be in the top three at the late, at
yeah
the worst.
Yeah.
And probably top two.
Yeah.
But I think
he'll be top two.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out there and say right now I'd have Bryce Harper ahead of him.
I probably would too, but that's, you know, that's no insult there.
It's a discussion for another day.
Yeah. we'll have a top 100 podcast down the road,
yep,
I promise. But when you're looking at the, you know, at the West as a whole, it has been kind of one of those stories that the West has been in at the major league level has been for the last, you know, several years, the Angels and whoever is competing with the Angels that year. Now
mm-hmm
the Rangers have kind of have made it at least a two-team race. But you obviously, you did our Mariners list, and you know the Mariners very well. What is it? I mean, disastrous 2010 season, I think we can all agree, for
yeah
the Mariners. How far away are they, you know, from getting back into contention, and what do they need to do?
Well, you know, I think they're closer than some people think. I mean, I think a lot of fans out there are really frustrated. It's been a tough several years for them now, but I think they're actually closer than you might think. And I think, you know, their next successful run is really going to depend on how well their young players progress. You know, they graduated players to the big leagues like Michael Saunders, Adam Moore, who, you know, it's questionable how much time he's going to get now with the signing of Olivo. I think they're really
right
trying to push him and see what he has. But then, you know, Michael
Pineda.
But
that's not a good sign that they're, like, going, hey, Adam Moore's our definitely
right
our catcher.
But, I mean, I still believe in Michael Saunders. And then they've got guys knocking on the door like Michael Pineda, you know, could step in the rotation next year, as, you know, as early as, you know, making the team out of spring training, I think. Dustin Ackley is very close. It's actually pretty remarkable. I don't want to say written off, but I think people just don't realize how good his season actually was because
right
he started out real poorly in April. And so I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, and with the position change he made, you know, that's not easy. Starting in Double A is not easy. But, you know, right after April, he picked things up
from
May on. He hit really well. They didn't waste any time in moving him to Triple A. So for a kid to come out of college, and we know he had polish, but he came out of college, made a position change, spent half a season in Double A, half in Triple A, and then, you know,
and
tore
boom,
up
yeah
the AFL.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable what he did, and he'll definitely, I think Mariners fans can expect to see him in Safeco Field at some point next year. I don't think they're going to bring him up right away, but I think that, you know, they'll probably give him a month or two more in Tacoma and then bring him up. So basically what I'm trying to say is the Mariners, they have a lot of young players that can form a core, and that's what they're going to need going forward, and pair that up with, you know, Felix Hernandez and Ichiro, who's still, you know,
still
very,
Ichiro,
very, very productive.
I keep wondering if he's going to get 3,000 hits in the U.S. and just, you know.
I wouldn't put anything past him.
When I was looking at these top 10, so one thing that also jumped out, if you're talking about what teams had a bad 2010, like, I mean, the Royals had kind of like, you know, and I've talked about the Royals because, you know, I do the Royals top 10, but the Royals had a 2010 where almost everything prospect-wise that could have happened well for them. Almost all their guys stayed healthy. They all, you know, with exception of essentially like Aaron Crow and Tim Melville, everyone else performed well, all that.
Yep.
The Oakland A's, well, almost, I mean, I won't say the exact opposite, but pretty close.
It was pretty close. I mean, I remember when we were starting to put these lists together, I remember just talking with Jim Schoenert, who does the A's list, about, you know, how he's going to rank these guys, and he was just running through. I mean, this guy got hurt, this guy got hurt, this guy didn't play very well. It was just
this guy
up and down the
this
list.
This guy left for a monastery. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's the topper right there. But up and down the list, I mean, those guys just all together as a group had disappointing seasons, I guess you could say. And
I mean, Grant Green is the number one. And I'll be honest, like, in talking to people that I talk to, you know, guys who saw him in the AFL and all, wasn't hearing a whole lot of complimentary things about Green, especially when it came to his defense. Like, you know, some serious concerns about whether he's going to be, you know, a solid shortstop defensively at the big league level. Chris Carter, who's number two, was working on a record at one point, which, you know, he thankfully for him, I think, avoided. But, you know, you started about as bad a start to a major league career as you can have. And then you got on the list Michael Taylor, who's number 10 on this list. If you talk about which prospects had the worst 2010s as far as their prospect status, it's hard to think of a whole lot of guys who saw more of a drop than Michael Taylor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's just not very good. I do still like, you know, some of these players in their list, but...
Who jumps out to you that you're like, okay, bad year in 2010, but you know what, I still like this guy.
From the A's?
Yeah.
I like Jamile Weeks. I've liked him since he was in college. I like the athleticism, you know, and he's a guy that I still have some belief in. But some of the guys I like better on this list are some of the newer guys. I mean,
right,
the draft guys. I like Michael Choice a lot.
Yeah, no, Choice, I mean, and, you know, he had a very solid debut. Short, but, you know, very solid debut.
Yeah, even Stassi didn't have a great year, but I like Max Stassi as well.
Catchers, it sometimes takes a little while.
It does.
You know, so, I mean, it and it's funny, that was really a catcher-heavy class, that draft class.
Yep.
And it's a good reminder that it does take a little while, because take Will Myers, who, you know, may not be a catcher long-term, but he was part of that
class.
He's
the exception, not the rule,
right,
for sure.
But you take him out, and the Stassis, the Luke Baileys, guys like that are still...
Austin Maddox went to school. I mean, Steve Barron in the Mariners organization, that's another one. I think he was the second high school catcher drafted that year.
And there's not many of those who've torn it up yet.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, it may not down the road put it together, but it does take a little while with catchers, obviously.
Yeah, it does.
But, so, would we agree? I think we agree Rangers 1 out of these four teams, Mariners 2, Angels 3?
Well, I think it's kind of a toss-up between the Mariners and the Angels. Matt Eddy and I were talking about the same thing. I like the Mariners top three, but I think I like the Angels' depth a little bit better.
And the Angels, that is what I'd say with the Angels. The Angels do have, I think, some pretty solid depth. As you go on, I do wonder, I guess, the question with them is how many, you know, how many impact guys they have is maybe a little bit of a question. But I do think that there's a lot of guys in the system who will be big leaguers.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, obviously Trout is easy to envision as a big leaguer.
I think he's going
to
make it.
Conger's very close. Walden's already
been
there. Conger's been up, yeah, right?
Yeah, briefly.
Yep.
But,
yep,
you know, yeah, they do have some guys who, you know, Trumbo's been up. I mean,
yep.
I don't know. I don't. If you map it out, I don't see Mark Trumbo being an everyday regular for the Angels, but he has been up. So, yeah, they do have a number of guys who are at the upper levels. I mean, Chatwood's been to AAA.
Yep.
But at the same time, I would probably, to me, say Mariners too because Ackley, Pineda, Franklin.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the top three definitely does way heavier.
Right,
say,
like,
yeah,
I mean,
so.
And, you know, and it's not as far as we see, you know, because Segura, who's number three on the Angels list, same level as Nick Franklin was last year,
mm-hmm,
and a different year, but, you know, a very good year in the Midwest League himself.
Sure.
So it's not, you know, that's number three versus number three. So it's not a, you know, a chasm there. But I think it's safe to say that Nick Franklin's going to show up a significant bit higher on the top hundreds probably than Segura.
Yeah.
And then I think we can agree Athletics four.
Yeah, I think the Athletics are definitely the fourth team in this division here.
And it's just as we go through these top tens, division after division, what seems to jump out over and over is we've been so spoiled. There's been such a stacked prospects list that there's just not a whole lot of teams that you know really jump out right now because there have been so many prospects who've recently broken in at the big league level. That leads to kind of one other thing I wanted to talk about. You know, we've seen in the last week Cliff Lee signed with the Phillies, shocking everyone.
Yeah,
I think
it was.
That's safe to
actually
say.
All three of the big free agent signings so far. I mean, I don't think anyone really predicted those. I mean, no, I don't think anyone saw Jason Worth signing with the Nationals.
I think that's
everyone
kind of
thought Jason Worth was
going
to be a Red Sox, maybe a Tiger, you know?
Right.
Crawford with the Red Sox, that was a little less.
I think that one was at least
the Red Sox are always major
projectable.
Players,
yeah, they yeah.
Sort of thing, but everyone, you know, everyone thought he was going to be an Angel. You know, everyone thought the
right.
Angels were going to go big and get Crawford and maybe Beltre and Soriano too. But and then you know, with Cliff Lee, the mystery team was real.
Although the original mystery team was there's a mystery team and it's not the Phillies, so so the mystery team was the Phillies. but yeah, I mean the Phillies obviously have now the rotation of all rotations, and you know how do you
think it stacks up to Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz?
So the thing I would say is it's deeper. You know, their number four is significantly better than what the number fours were for most of that stretch. I mean, you had, you know, kind of when Maddox comes in, you had Avery really at the tail end. I mean, you wouldn't have known at the time. If you'd have asked me, compare that when Maddox signed with that group to knowing what we knew then to this group, I would probably say Braves. But we didn't know that Steve Avery's career was almost over. And, you know, you added Denny Nagel at the tail end of that. But I'd say probably, you know, look, the four guys that they have, I think it's a deeper it's – I would still say that the number one, I mean, Greg Maddox, John Smoltz at their top end, I'd probably still rather have that, you know, those top three, if you said pick any three of these Phillies pitchers, I'd probably still rather have at the time, you know, I mean, Greg Maddox in that stretch was insanely good.
Yeah.
But if you said – no, I mean, but as far as the depth of those four, that fourth guy's better. Cole Hamels is better than whoever was the fourth starter for most of that stretch. For the, I mean, it was Kevin Millwood, and it was Denny Nagel. You know, at the start it was Avery, but that wasn't for long. So, I mean, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I actually agree with that. I think the three is probably better in the top two, you know, Maddox and Smoltz.
Or Glavine, I mean, because, you know,
it
depends on the year.
But the Phillies' depth is, you know, top to bottom is what really makes the difference.
But, so what's happened with that now is so now the question becomes, okay, well, the Yankees, I know the Yankees are publicly saying, you know, well, we're on to plan B, and plan B is patience. But no one really seems to believe that the Yankees are going to go into, especially if Andy Pettit announces, you know, hey, I'm retired, that they're going to go into the season with the rotation as it's currently constructed, which would be CC Sabathia, Phil Hughes, AJ Burnett, kind of cringe and hold, cross your fingers, and then Hector Nwesi, Ivan Nova, you know, and I don't know who, you know, maybe, you know, midseason Betances or Brackman or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone believes that that's what the Yankees are going to do. And also you have the Rangers who are kind of potentially in the market now for an ace. But the thing that jumps out is, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the Zach Greinke deal, which obviously is possible.
Yep.
And besides that, there's not a whole lot of guys who seem even to be, you know, on
maybe
the market.
Maybe Matt Garza.
Yeah, Garza's definitely on the market, yep. I think. I think you could – I think if you're the Rays, you're definitely taking calls on him.
Sounds like Fausto Carmona might be available, you know.
Yeah, although I think that's a step down there,
yeah,
I mean, to me.
Sure, sure.
You know, but yeah, I mean that's to me that's more in that. It's like, you know, if you said you could get Carmona, if you said Carmona versus Pavano, I don't know who I'd, because Carl Pavano is probably the best free agent pitcher left now. But,
yeah.
But one of the things we were talking about when we this dearth of prospects right now, it does make it a little harder if you're saying, okay, well, we're going to trade, you know, one of these guys for prospects. Well, it becomes a little harder because there aren't that many teams out there who have the kind of prospect hauls that you would seemingly need to get for these guys. Now, the thing that jumps out is that a lot of these guys, when they have been traded recently, when you talk about Cliff Lee, who's been traded twice now, you know, recently for prospects,
yep.
and Roy Halladay, Halladay's haul looks pretty good in hindsight. Like, it still looks pretty solid. Drabeck, you know, Travis d'Arnaud, it looks like a solid group, but the Cliff Lee hauls have not necessarily been blow-you-away trades, have they?
They haven't. No, they haven't. I mean, our Phillies list just went up, and none of the three pitchers the Mariners sent to Philadelphia made the top 10.
The three players, Gillies, outfielder was part of that too. Yeah,
right.
None of them are top 10 guys.
Yep.
And then, you know, well, you've just done the Mariners list, and you know, with their trade,
Smoke didn't qualify.
Smoke didn't qualify.
Yeah,
you know,
he definitely would have been two or three.
Right.
You know. Let's see. Josh Lukey was close. I mean,
let me ask you this. So, you know, if Josh Lukey didn't have this scarlet letter on his jersey now, that is going to make it really hard, it seems like, for him to, you know, for the Mariners to promote him to the big league level for them. If he didn't have that, like, did that affect his ranking at all? Or?
Yeah, it did. Because, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, he was a tough guy to rank just because. Because of the fact that, like you said, he's going to be a tough guy to promote,
you're Baseball America. This is the Baseball America podcast, so I feel comfortable that most of our listeners here know the story. But you know, give them the quick, you know, thumbnail sketch of what we're talking about. If there's someone.
Okay. In 2008, Josh Lukey. The charges didn't come out until 2009. But basically, what happened was he was. You know, charged with raping and sodomizing a woman when he was in Bakersfield. He
pled guilty to lesser.
He pled no contest. On lesser charges.
Yeah.
And so there was no trial or anything like that. And he actually spent 42 days in jail, you know, during the whole process and everything. And then after that all happened, that's when he was traded.
And at the time, and then what came out was that the Mariners, like, it became a story in Seattle because it wasn't something where the Mariners traded for Lukey and said, hey,
yeah. It became a story because
we're acquiring this guy who has this history. It was more of, wait, what? He has this history?
I mean, basically there could have been two ways to handle it. They could have said, yeah, we knew about this, and, you know, We're going to give this guy a second chance.
He served
or they
his
could
time.
Have said,
He's...
you know, wait, what? We didn't know about this, and you know,
they went with B.
Pleaded ignorance, and yeah, they went with B. And either way, you know, there probably would have been some sort of backlash, but it kind of became a bigger story than
maybe
it would have.
I was going to say A would have probably, we don't know if they we don't know that they, you know, whether they knew or not. Now we'll say this: we knew. You know, we had written. You know, I mean, that was the explanation for why Josh Lukey for the Rangers was in low A at the start of the season, because you either had to send him to low A or double A because he was not going back to Bakersfield.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to believe that a team would not have that somewhere in their records, but it's possible they didn't. But by not having it, by having it be the we didn't know, it led to multiple further stories, which were the question of, well, how didn't you know? When
exactly.
did you find
it became
out?
Its own beast in
right.
Seattle, and but you know, so if you put that aside, Josh Lukey is really talented and has lights out stuff at the back of a bullpen, and I think he definitely would have been in my top 10 without that. I think I put him 12 with that, and I think, you know, honestly, I think that he still could get a chance. I think, you know, I think it could blow over because. His talent is that good, and you know.
And time does seem to these things fade a little bit as far as the attention that comes with them. You know,
sure.
That had to be obviously one of the tougher ranking decisions because if he was in a different organization now, it would probably not affect him as much. But when a reliever gets called up, it's not that big a deal. In his case, in Seattle, it's going to be a big deal if it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a little bit tough to rank, but talent-wise, he's a top 10 quality prospect for sure.
Right, back in the top probably, right, because he's a late inning reliever.
Yeah, I mean his stuff compares favorably to Dan Cortez,
right,
who is 10th.
Yeah.
So
that actually there's, you know, that's a pretty good comp,
mm-hmm,
in some ways.
Yep.
But the thing that I been talking around the office this week, we talked about the possibility of a Greinke trade, and
you've been going back and forth at Jim about that.
Yeah, we have. We've enjoyed kind of talking about this. But one of the things is that the Royals have come out and said that what they're looking for is, they're not going to trade Greinke unless they get a really significant talent haul, because they don't have the desperate need to trade him. He's got 2 years left under his contract. And the other thing is that they want it to match up with the needs that they have. Because,
sure,
which everyone would like to, but one of the interesting things is if you said, what are the needs that the Royals have? Well, shortstop is the biggest need if you don't think that Christian Colon's a shortstop second baseman who the thought is if he plays shortstop, he's average at best, maybe a tick below, and he's probably a little bit above average if you move him to second. He's got the bat to play second. But if you move him to second, what they need is a pretty close to big league ready shortstop, because that's a hole they have. And they could use, if you don't think Will Myers is going to be a catcher, they could probably use a catcher also. Those are two, and maybe a right-handed starter. Well, the interesting thing is that if you just kind of go looking around, there aren't a whole lot of shortstop.
You have to find a team that is in a position to take on Greinke that has those things.
And the interesting thing with that is even if you go beyond what teams have that, if you said, okay, so who are the shortstop prospects out there?
It's a down year for shortstop prospects. That's one thing that really stuck out to me when I started looking at my top 100 candidates. I think the top shortstop prospect is Manny Machado. You can't trade for him yet.
You can trade him as a player to be named later that you get on August 15th or whatever. But you can't trade for him now. And beyond that, he's not. I mean, the Royals need a close to big league ready shortstop, a guy who can show up in 2012, not. That's not Machado. Go beyond him. There's not a whole lot of. We just talked about Jurickson Profar. Jurickson Profar is a long ways away from the big leagues right now.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as upper levels, the best guy I could come up with off the top of my head, I haven't sat down and charted out, but is probably maybe D. Gordon.
Maybe. If you believe in the bat enough.
Right, and that's not. This is not a.
I think he's going to need a couple more seasons.
Right.
Hitting.
This is, to put it this way, this is not even, this is not Elvis Andrus. This is not, Alcides Escobar, which both of them, I think, have some questions with the bat, but if this was a year ago, those would be the names you'd be throwing out. And I think those would be much more kind of slam dunks as, okay, here's a guy who we can trade for, acquire, feel comfortable that he's going to play as our shortstop for a while to go.
So if the Royals asked for Elvis Andrus and something, would you?
Well, if I'm the Rangers, I don't think you can do that, because who's your plan B?
I think the plan B would have to be some sort of stopgap or something,
So what you're doing is you're getting an ace, but at the same time you're taking away one of your best young, Andrus's year was, very flashes of excellent defense,
mm-hmm,
during the regular season. Not the offense that you want long term, but hey, he was 21, I think, the whole year or whatever. But you saw in the playoffs, this guy is a guy who can be an impact player.
Yeah.
I think if you're the Royals, you'd be thrilled with that, but I don't, it's a kind of the basis, starting point of a deal, but I don't know if you're the Rangers. I think that's making yourself weaker in a significant area to make another area stronger.
For a longer amount of time. Greinke's only available for two more years.
Andrus is under contract for the next five, just from the standpoint of arbitration all coming up. He's not even at arbitration yet. And if you're the Rangers, it's not like, we got Jurickson Profar. Well, Jurickson Profar will be showing up, after you got to have Greinke on a new deal before Profar is going to be showing up. That's the thing that's going to be interesting is just it's not – there's not as many teams out there that you look at and say, okay, well, they can be a match. Like the Yankees, it's not that the Yankees don't have prospects who could be cornerstones. Jesus Montero is a good cornerstone to a trade. But if you're the Royals, you can take the approach of, hey, we want the best talent we can get. Montero will be part of that. But Jesus Montero, if you don't believe he's a catcher, and I would feel confident in saying, if you're breaking in 2012, 2013, you hope to have a staff that has Montgomery, Duffy, Dwyer, you know, Lamb, all those guys in it. You don't want to have a catcher who's a shaky, you know, defensively.
Yeah.
If you say that he's not a catcher, well, then you start throwing him in the pile at first base, and you've got Billy Butler. First base DH is Billy Butler, Eric Hosmer, him, and then Keila Kahui. I mean, that's you can only play two of those, and it would be Hosmer and, you know, Montero and Butler fighting for those two spots, but that you'd have to end up turning around and trading again. So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, you might be able to get away with a bad defensive team with those pitchers, though.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, the approach I've always heard with the young pitching, you know, staffs is that you want to put good defense behind them to get them into good, you know, good habits and all.
Yeah.
You don't want them thinking they have to strike everyone out, too. So, I mean, that's if you're taking the if you're a Royals fan, the most optimistic thing you could hope for is you're saying that, you know, you're hoping that this team is like the Braves of the, you know, late 80s going into the early 90s. And with that, you know, what they did is they said, okay, well, we're going to get Sid Bream, Terry Pendleton, Rafael Belliard, guys like that to help the defense to make the Smoltz and Glavins and all those better. So it'll be very interesting to see. Now, again, you know the Mariners system very well. I've seen the name floated out there. I don't see where it would make any sense, but do you think there's any chance that the Mariners would trade Felix for a
No. I don't know where these, you know, his name is coming out there from. I don't think the Mariners are thinking about trading him. I mean, he's I always like to, you know, say he's younger than David Price, which is kind of
insane.
Startling to think about, but yeah, he's younger. He actually has Felix has the same birthday as Carlos Santana, which is pretty interesting, you know, but I don't think so. And Yankees fans like to think that, you know, everyone's available for them, you know, but I just don't see it happening.
Especially because I can't think of a deal that, like, say the Yankees, I can't think of a deal that the Yankees could do that would actually, you could say as the Mariners, that this is going to make us better than what we have by having Felix out there every fifth day.
Especially, you know, Felix just signed his extension.
Yeah, he's locked up
through 2014. The price actually went up a little bit after he won the Cy Young, but, you know, for $80 million.
No, that's
for 11 to 14.
And again, you're talking about in 2014
this offseason.
And we're talking about like the deal Cliff Lee got, which he took less money, but we're talking about that's Cliff Lee. You're getting Cliff Lee from 32, 33, 34, 35, 36.
Yeah.
Felix Hernandez in 2014 will still be
28.
Yeah. I mean, he'll still be in the middle of his career.
Yeah.
So I can't see. Well, for one thing, like, to me, if you trade Felix Hernandez, you're not trading him just for prospects. You have to get big league ready guys.
You'd have to. Because, like I said, I believe that the Mariners are closer than some think. I think, you know, they can, you know, build this core, but he's the centerpiece of that core.
But from another standpoint, if you're Jack Zarensic, you can't trade Felix Hernandez just for prospects and say, hey, we think that in 2013 we're going to be really good. You're not going to be around in 2013 to get that, then, you know, to enjoy that probably. If you say, hey, we've made all these moves these last couple of years, and by the way, we're kicking the can 3 years down the road.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's realistic to even think about the Mariners trading Felix Hernandez right now.
Of course, if you're, you know, on the other hand, on the other end of the spectrum, the Phillies, it's like, okay, well, you got Joe Blanton, and you're just like, okay, well, can you find a nice home for him and, you know, send him somewhere to help someone else out because, well, that's a lot of money to pay for a fifth starter. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, that is.
Not many teams have that problem, you know, in a long time. But, well, this is the Baseball America podcast. We thank you for listening as always. For Connor Glassy, I'm J.J. Cooper. Remind you again that we're sponsored by MLB Network. But I also want to tell you as Christmas gets near and if you're working on your gifts for a baseball, you know, for fellow baseball fans, if you're listening to this, I take it you're a baseball fan. But for fellow baseball fans, check out baseballamerica.com/store. Because you can find, we've got, it's book season now. We got the almanac, we've got the prospect handbook, And then, you know, obviously a subscription to the magazine. We can, you know, you can read it online, you can read it in print, or you now we have the digital edition online, so you can actually see the actual magazine and read it like a magazine on, you know, on your screen, on your iPad, on whatever, you know, iPad coming up, I believe, actually, on that. But so, you know, a lot of different opportunities out there, so take a look at those. We appreciate the download, and we'll talk to you again next week.